DW Deutsche Welle. World in Progress.
Hello and welcome to World in Progress. I'm Sarah Steffen in Bonn, Germany. Eritrea is one of the most isolated nations in the world and has a bad track record when it comes to human rights. Many have fled the country, trying to escape a repressive regime and poverty.
For the past 10 years, our teachers, our health personnel, our agricultural personnel, our administrators, everyone that is here serving, you know, for all these years, was national service. We could not pay them proper salaries because we did not have the money to pay them proper salaries.
People trying to flee repressive regimes, that's also true for North Korea. But those who've made it out are faced with a new challenge, being able to communicate with people in South Korea. You think that sounds odd?
There's been a lot of linguistic change, particularly in the South, with the influence of globalization and the English language in particular. So they arrive here often surprised with the amount of borrowed words that they're unfamiliar with as soon as they go into a coffee shop, for instance.
Stay with us for these stories. Eritrea has often been called the North Korea of Africa. Both rulers, Eritrea's President Isaias Afwerki and North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un, have a track record of jailing people they don't agree with. Both men have been named enemies of the press by Reporters Without Borders. Afwerki, who has been Eritrea's president since 1993, has eliminated his rivals and jailed independent journalists. Eritrea has been ranked last on Reporters Without Borders' World Press Freedom Index for 9 consecutive years since 2007. Journalists have died in detention, disappeared or fled into exile, according to the organization. Many Eritreans have risked their lives trying to flee their country because they don't see a future there. Linda Staude went to get a first-hand account on life in Eritrea, and her report is presented by Sue Cox.
The lunchtime rush is on at Sweet Asmara Cafe. 3 elderly men are debating loudly over hot, sugary tea. The bar is done out in 1930s decor. From the gleaming coffee machine, the barista Sarah can quench your every caffeinated desire, dispensing cappuccinos, espressos, macchiatos. Sarah knows how to fulfill every dream that centers on imbibing caffeine.
Eritreans do it as a culture because the Italians do it the same thing before. That's why we use it until now.
Eritrea's former colonial rulers didn't just bequeath a fondness for strong coffee, chic bars and pasta. Asmara's Italian architectural heritage is visible all over town.
Asmara, you see, is full of different styles of architecture built during the Italian colonial period. They never thought they leave Eritrea. So they were building like Rome or something like their own in very short time, in 14 years.
Art Deco, neoclassicism, Novecento, fascist modernism. Asmara has it all, explains Kebriab Sembili. He is an architect working for the Asmara Heritage Project. But the building's beautiful facades here in Piccola Roma, the Little Rome of Africa, are not able to hide the country's tremendous problems. Eritrea is losing its people.
More than 40,000 people fled the country in 2015. Some people argue that not all of these were actually Eritreans. But it is an undisputed fact that a very large number of Eritreans flee the country and try to make their way to Europe.
So says Christian Manau, the ambassador of the European Union in Asmara. Thousands of migrants risk their lives in dilapidated boats trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea. This is at least partly the fault of the European Union itself, according to Yemani Gebriab. He's an advisor to Eritrea's long-serving president, Isaias Afwerki.
Europe and European countries believe that there is this evil government in Eritrea, that the situation in Eritrea is very difficult for people, and therefore Eritreans are in need of international protection. So if you're an Eritrean and you somehow arrive in Europe, or you claim to be an Eritrean in Europe, you're automatically almost given political asylum.
Right after independence from Ethiopia in 1993, Eritrea was perceived to be the best country in Africa. Its new government adopted an exemplary constitution. However, the constitution was never put into effect. Instead, the country has been ruled by presidential emergency decree. Asmara's huge Medeba market. Craftsmen hammer away, creating metal goods. Huge ovens and storage tanks are stacked, ready for sale. Young women grind fresh, aromatic spices. In this dark little shop, Stefanos fits together the metal parts of beds and chairs. Asked about politics, he is wary and cautious. He won't say a word on the topic, but the 23-year-old is willing to talk business.
He said the situation now in the country is very tough, especially the economic crisis. And the market is not as it used to be before. So he said nowadays it's a bit difficult to get his own family, but he wishes for the better days to come.
Just a few steps further down the street, Abraham is hammering on a farming tool. He works 8, 9, sometimes 10 hours a day, starting early in the morning and finishing by 6 p.m. Right now, he has work to do, he says, a polite way of saying that he prefers not to keep talking. All of a sudden, his brother shows up, the owner of the tiny workshop. He brings the message across more explicitly. Get them out of here, he shouts. A group of young men that gathered in curiosity at the entrance starts laughing and then disperses again. No money, no freedom, no future, says one of them as we leave. This short comment, after we had turned off the microphone, displays the frustration that makes so many young Eritreans flee their country.
The main political reason is the indefinite duration of national service. This makes it very difficult, if not impossible, for young people to make plans for their future.
In addition to that, people flee for economic reasons, Christian Manal says. There simply aren't enough jobs. The little pay young Eritreans get for their time in national service limits their chances of improving their lives. According to the president's advisor, Yemani Gebreyab, Eritrea's system of national service is necessary because it continues to be threatened by its powerful neighbor Ethiopia and because it's one of the poorest countries in the world.
For the past 10 years, our teachers, our health personnel, our agricultural personnel, our administrators, everyone that you see here serving, you know, for all these years was national service. We could not pay them proper salaries because we did not have the money to pay them proper salaries.
There have already been some reforms, he adds. The much-hated national service is now better paid because the economic situation has improved. Eritrea is proud about what it has achieved since it began building a nation after achieving independence from Ethiopia in 1993. Water runs through a small channel into a neatly planted bed. Tomatoes grow here alongside cauliflower, spinach, carrots and spices. A small generator fuels a pump that carries the water a few hundred metres up the hill onto the fields.
This is 3 years old dam, and we didn't observe of this shortage of water. And the rain was not a problem on this 3 years, and we didn't see anything of this the lost level.
Explains Asrat Haile. He works with the Ministry of Agriculture and is in charge of agricultural production in Eritrea's central province. The small village of Lansa is a model community in which farmers are able to grow crops all year long. Waldi Ab Waldi Johannes is proud of his village.
We have plenty of water in this village. We are not rich, but we aren't poor either. And we would never emigrate. This village has a horticulture project where we grow 22 different types of vegetables.
The 84-year-old was the administrator of the village for most of his life. His successor, Hafia Sayi, joins in, carrying an armful of cabbages and a bunch of carrots.
The market prices for our vegetables vary. Some days they are higher and some days they are lower. Cauliflower always sells at a very good price, as well as some of the bean species, for example, soybeans.
The vegetables are sold all over the country, the young woman says. Upstream, on the other side of the dam, the villagers also grow wheat. But wheat, along with barley and corn, only grow during the rainy season. Asrat Haile.
Every farmer has the same area, and everyone has horticultural crops. Horticultural crops are more expensive than the cereal crops, and the standard of living, when it's compared with the other villages, this is the best.
The micro dam that made this possible was financed by the European Union. It is one of more than 120 dams in the central province alone. Because of the dams, Eritrea has been able to guarantee the supply of staple foods for its people. Yemani Gebriab.
The next stage for us is to ensure that we grow enough food for ourselves with the possibility of export. We have the Gulf countries as our neighbors. They're oil rich, but there are problems in terms of water and soil.
The export of staple food is supposed to supply the country with foreign currency. So are new mining projects, as well as, possibly, tourism. The capital, Asmara, with its wide palm tree-lined streets, narrow alleyways and architectural treasures, wants to be recognised as a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
We are very confident we are going to satisfy their requirement.
Midhani Teklimariam manages the Asmara Heritage Project. Eritrea is ready to receive tourists, says Solomon Abraha. He is the manager of the Ambassadoria Hotel and head of the Eritrean Tourism Association. He's angry about the bad reputation his nation has in Western countries.
Eritrea, they say this country is like North Korea. Eritrea, they put in bad image. You tell me, and so how you can imagine? And tourists from Europe, listening to these things, to choose to come to Eritrea.
Amnesty International accuses the Eritrean government of having arrested and detained at least 10,000 people for political reasons since independence in 1993. Claire Beston works for the human rights organisation.
There's a lot of secrecy around detention in Eritrea. A lot of detention centres aren't known about. Amnesty International has received a number of reports of people dying in shipping containers as a result of the conditions of the heat and as a result of torture and other forms of ill treatment.
People who criticise the government often disappear without any trace. This is the outcome of an investigation conducted by the United Nations Commission on Human Rights.
The Commission found that systematic, widespread and gross human rights violations have been and are being committed with impunity in Eritrea under the authority of the government.
Says Sheila Ketharut, head of the Investigation Commission. However, critics believe the commissioners to be biased as they only interviewed asylum seekers outside Eritrea and ignored positive reports from other experts. Yemani Gebriab.
Are there human rights issues in Eritrea? There are human rights issues in every country in the world. Yeah. Does Eritrea have one of the worst human rights records? Definitely not. It's always Eritrea. It's always Eritrea. Again, there is an all-out attack on this nation.
The latest demand by the Investigation Commission is to take the Eritrean government to the International Criminal Court. However, this could drive the country back into isolation, an isolation that has just started to break open. Christian Manal.
Wir sind der Ansicht, dass es kleine Fortschritte gibt.
We believe there is some progress. Of course, we would welcome more progress, especially in the fields of human rights and democratic rights. But we believe that the past 1 or 2 years have shown that it is possible to work in Eritrea, even to work in these areas.
The EU has just approved €200 million of development aid for Eritrea. A part of that is supposed to help enforce human rights. Most of it, however, will be used to secure electrical power supplies using renewable energy sources. This means the money will be used to help the Eritrean economy. We are visiting the Dolce Vita cotton spinning mill, where huge machinery winds white threads into big bobbins. There are dozens of machines in what seem like endless rows. In the back of the factory building, the bobbins are palletized. Then they're shipped to Italy, where the white cotton thread is dyed and processed.
The only problem we have here is that power. In the last 2-3 years in Eritrea, there was a problem of lack of power. We are facilitated because we get at least 2 shifts, but we cannot work the whole day. Actually, spinning should work 365 days, 24 hours, to be efficient.
Pietro Zambiati is the CEO of one of the few private businesses in Eritrea. He employs 530 workers in his factory on the outskirts of Asmara. Most of them are women. The workers bend over their steaming, pressing irons, pressing sleeves, collars, fronts and backs of shirts. Right next to them, other women join the shirt parts with their sewing machines. They work quickly, with great focus, because apart from their base salary, which is already above average by local standards, they receive a bonus for good performance. Still, there is a high turnover of employees. Pietro Zambiati.
There is a combination of things. One is people live in the country, but I think it's more the effect of the money that comes here from abroad, from the people who live in Germany, Sweden, to the family. So the people get money like that, and they, at the end, don't work.
This is extremely dangerous for the economy. On the black market, $1 used to be worth 60 or 80 nakfa. But the government enacted a currency reform which drained the black market dry. Instead of cash payments, checks and receipts became compulsory.
That should be the rule, right? You should be able to give a receipt. You should be able to pay taxes on the income that you have made. If there is no record at all, you know, an economy is not operating properly.
First and foremost, the reform plunged the economy into chaos. Because there were too few banknotes, the people could not buy more than the most necessary things. For weeks, Pietro Zambiati was promoting special offers.
Bring difficulties in the brief term, because we also have sales locally and the sales drop down radically. But I agree that the country has to have an official system, not an unofficial banking system that is managed by whoever.
Without the black market, there is no money anymore to finance criminal activities, including the profitable smuggling of refugees to other countries. That's what Yemani Gebriab hopes, at any rate.
We spend so much effort and so much money to train our people. Education is free in Eritrea. Health is almost free in Eritrea. You think we spend all this money to want them to leave the country? Definitely not.
He has the EU on his side for this effort. Since the so-called refugee crisis has come to dominate the headlines, a possible cooperation with Eritrea has become a very interesting option for Europe. Gerd Müller, the German development minister, visited Asmara in order to explore the matter. He immediately was confronted with criticism from activists who are against making a potential deal with an unjust regime. But Christian Manal does not support the criticism.
We believe that cooperation and critical engagement will help us move forward with this issue. In our view, to withdraw from Eritrea will not help the human rights situation in the country.
For Manal, it's clear that in an interconnected world, the situation in Eritrea is not isolated from the rest of the world, and that it's important to continue to talk.
That report by Linda Stauder was presented by Sue Cox. From the African North Korea to, well, the real North Korea. It's a country shrouded in secrecy, making headlines mostly with regular threats and nuclear tests. Reports that do come out of the isolated country are horrifying. According to the UN, there's evidence of torture, execution and starvation in North Korea, where between 80 to 120,000 people are being held in prison camps. Some North Koreans manage to flee from their country, most notably a high-ranking diplomat from the North, Tae Yong-ho, the former North Korean deputy ambassador to London. While they're trying to carve out a new life for themselves in their newfound home, some of the 30,000 defectors might not have been expecting one particular challenge, though. The language. Luckily, there's an app for that. Jason Strother has more from Seoul.
When Lee Sung-ju orders our coffees, he sounds just like any other guy from the South Korean capital. Same when he takes a phone call.
Yeah, 실장님. 예, 갔다 왔습니다. 예, 내일 뵙겠습니다. 네. This is my Korean accent now.
The 28-year-old university student says when he first came to South Korea in 2002, he didn't sound like this.
People immediately recognized me that I'm from North Korea, because I had a really strong North Korean accent.
And sounding North Korean doesn't get you very far here. Most South Koreans have only heard the North Korean accent from the wavering tirades broadcast on Pyongyang's official media. But to many Southerners, that doesn't sound scary. It's more of a joke. The North Korean accent is sometimes mocked on South Korean comedy programs, like how these actresses on this show exaggerate the staccato North Korean tone. That's why defector Lee Sung-ju says he tried to pick up the South Korean accent as quickly as possible to fit in.
People just keep asking me my hometown, my background. So whenever I was asked by them, I had to say a lie.
Why were you ashamed?
Man, because I don't want to share my story. People know that North Korea is a really poor country.
Before his escape, Lee was living on the streets of North Korea and almost starved during the country's famine. He says if South Koreans would have known he was a defector, they would have looked down on him and he wouldn't have made any friends. Lee also discovered he didn't understand almost any of the slang his classmates used.
I just tried to memorize a Korean dictionary. The dictionary was for teenagers. It took 8 months, actually.
The linguistic shock that Lee first experienced is typical for newly arrived North Koreans. That's according to Sokil Park, director of research and strategy at the refugee support group Liberty in North Korea, LINK. He says the biggest challenge for newly arrived defectors is learning all the new words that South Korea has acquired during the past 7 decades since the peninsula was split.
There's been a lot of linguistic change, particularly in the South, with the influence of globalization and the English language in particular. So they arrive here often are surprised with the amount of borrowed words that they're unfamiliar with as soon as they go into a coffee shop, for instance.
For North Korean defectors struggling with South Korea-only words and expressions, a smartphone app could help them bridge the language gap. It's called UniVoca, short for Unification Vocabulary. It allows a user to type in or snap a photo of an unfamiliar word, and it gives a North Korean translation. There's also a section that gives practical language advice, like how to order a pizza, and there's a video explaining some dating terminology. One of the app's developers, Jung Jong-chol of the advertising firm Cheo Worldwide, explains how they decided on the vocabulary. He flips through a book with highlighted words on some pages.
We first showed this typical South Korean grammar textbook to a class of teenage defectors who picked out the unfamiliar words. We also consulted older North Koreans to help with translations. So far, they've added about 3,600 words to the app's database.
Jung adds, before he started working on the app, he never realized how limited North Korean vocabulary is and how some expressions, now out of style in the South, are still used in the North.
So now I'm typing in, in the app, let's say tower. There's no translation for tower.
We pass an ice cream shop.
Yes, ice cream.
He types ice cream and gets a translation.
But we don't use this word when I was in North Korea. We just say ice cream and ice cake.
One more try. We find a Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, donuts. Oh, here we go. Oh, yes. This is correct. We're using, in North Korean, it is garakjipbang.
Ring bread.
Yeah, ring bread, yes. But we call garakjipbang or donuts.
I think I was more surprised that North Korea has donuts. Inside a supermarket, Lee tests out the app on a few more South Korea-only words, including the one for restroom.
화장실.
You don't call that in North Korea?
We have different words.
Lee types in 화장실, and the translation pops up.
화장실
in
Korean.
Oh, this is good. 위생실 in North Korean. Yeah, okay. Awesome.
So based on this quick test, the app's vocab list seems somewhat hit or miss. Maybe its developers could get some help from Han Young-un. He's a South Korean lexicographer who for the past several years has worked with North Korean counterparts to assemble the first unified Korean dictionary. And from what he's learned, he says he doesn't believe that the North Korean language is stuck in the past.
All languages are living and growing, even North Korean. Over the years, they've borrowed foreign words too, but mainly from Russian and Chinese.
Political tensions have gotten in the way of completing the joint dictionary, but Han hopes that the project will be completed in the next few years. As for the UniVoca North Korean language app, it's open source, so users can add new words as they come across them. Defector Lee Sung-ju says he was skeptical at first, but the app won him over.
This is really nice. I mean, pretty good, yeah. So it was very well designed. There are not many functions, but all is very useful for lurking escapees who just arrived here.
Jason Strother, DW, Seoul.
And that wraps up this week's World in Progress. If you'd like to listen to this or past episodes again, just go to dw.com/World in Progress or find us on iTunes or SoundCloud. Thanks very much for tuning in from all of us in the studio, Iliane Gilyaducci and Johannes Schmühling. I'm Sarah Steffen and this was World in Progress. Bye for now.